From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
Doople doople deeple dee doople do deekle dee. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average.
How many minutes do we have, Storm?
Tonight.
You just sounded like Steve Carell.
Was I Carelling?
No, you were Carelling.
Okay, I'll take that. It is Monday evening, April 19th. Now I'm Shatnering, 2010.
From Carell to Shatner is already a front runner for the name of this podcast, which is episode number 082.
Well, hello, Paul.
Hello, Storm. It has been about a couple of weeks since the last podcast, though certainly not since the last time you and I spoke to each other.
No, certainly not. We've been busy boys.
We have.
But gotta tell the peoples the truth. Yeah. There was not really any good reason we didn't do the podcast last week.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a good reason. It's that we were both...
We didn't feel like it.
Yeah, more just that, I don't know, I don't care. It wasn't like that.
Yeah.
It was more like we were sort of... Excuse me, my throat is tightening it up because it doesn't want to speak the truth.
Well, here, loosen it up by telling everyone how many minions we have.
Oh, right. Wow, we have 304 minions in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions.
Which means we have a new designation.
And I love the snot out of this one.
Yeah, this one was all you, and all hail you for it. What is the new minion designation for 300 versus 349?
This is, it just, I don't know, phrases just come sometimes and stick in your head. This batch... This squadron, whatever it is, the Switchblade Lotharios.
Or Lotharios.
Or Lotharios.
We looked it up before the podcast. You can pronounce it either way.
Hold on. I'll explain, but I have to adjust my microphone. Talk to the peoples.
I will talk to the peoples. Hi, how's it going, people? Storm's adjusting his microphone. I have a pimple.
Bloody, bloody, blah.
Left upper lip. On the left side of my upper lip, as opposed to my left upper lip. I do not have four lips, just the two, but I have a pimple that's been bugging me for a week.
Okay, I'm back.
I told him all about the pimple on my lip.
Oh, that thing.
Yeah.
You've been sending me pictures of that all day.
It's a lovely thing. Anyway, so you were talking, you were speaking truth to the people.
Yeah, that it's sort of, I think this is going to be something we'll talk about a bit, since we're all about the peek behind the curtain. Don't worry, we'll talk about inanity and things,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, sure. There will be fart jokes and things of regular people nature eventually, I'm sure.
But the peek behind the curtain will be sort of, you know, as people who do creative stuff for a living, you get the doldrums every once in a while.
You do.
And we kind of, we're in a little bit of a rut.
Yeah.
Now, but before we get into the rutness, and promise it won't be a slog, it could be a slog, I just don't think it will be.
Nah.
Because we're coming out of it. I adjusted my mic. I'm very proud that I now, I don't know if I talked about it before, but I was getting a new desk that was going to revolutionize production in the Storm-o-sphere.
It's like Henry Ford levels of innovation and,
yes,
and improvement.
Yes, it's actually kind of like that.
So, like, there's no black people or Jews allowed in your office now?
Well, there's one half Jew allowed, and typically no one else comes in, mm-hmm. So I can't put that to any kind of test. However, it has improved my efficiency already, and I didn't even need a guy in a waistcoat with a stopwatch to do their studies beforehand to determine what needed to be done. Uh-huh. I knew what needed to be done. I needed to get rid of the ragtag fugitive setup that I had.
Uh-huh.
where there were several surfaces at several levels with cords going everywhere, and sure, it may have looked cool to some, but it was hindering my productivity.
It was a pain in the ass, in other words.
Yes. So I'm proud to present, for the first time, I am finally able to use this cool-ass microphone that we bought for such a purpose a long time ago, but never could, because the setup wouldn't work. And I am now sitting at the Battle Station Creatron 3000.
Uh-huh. Which is, you know, you've been going on about, you ordered this desk, like, it seems months ago.
It was months ago.
Was this desk, like, hand-hewn from, like, a single large tree?
You're not far off, mister. you're going to laugh, but it was actually made by the Amish.
No. The Amish make some good desks.
Oh, and everybody knows they do. Yeah. You know, the Amish and the Mennonites and, of course, the Shakers, they weren't Amish, but it was that kind of thing.
Amish and Mennonites and Shakers. Oh, my.
Oh, my. They make good furniture. And this was custom built, not like, you know, like there's one guy who spent his whole life learning how to make my desk, and after he did, he was killed. It wasn't like that. So that would be kind of cool.
That would be really good. Just like a forced one of a kind industry.
Yeah. Yeah. Be like an ancient Egyptian type of thing, you know, where the pharaoh might bury all of his close ones with him.
Right.
I just have a desk that happens to have its maker's teeth embedded in the top.
Yeah, but they also they've been repurposed as a stapler, so.
And a charming one too. I did agree that the builder could carve his initials into his teeth before they were installed.
So anyway, you got this cool ass desk.
I've got a cool ass desk. That's all I really wanted to say.
And oh, I want to apologize to anyone who's listening to this show on headphones. I too have some new technology, some new equipment. We recently have both upgraded to the latest version of Pro Tools, which is the recording program we use. And in order to do that, I had to get the newer version of the M-Box. This all means nothing to 95% of you, but suffice to say, I needed a new piece of equipment because the latest version of our software doesn't support the old version of the thing I had anymore.
And new equipment is inherently great.
Yeah, new equipment is inherently great. And this one, wow, you're just banging the snot out of your microphone there.
I did. Here. Take that. They can't
Ow.
Hear it. It's only
Ow.
You.
Anyway,
it's a stupid headset. Go ahead.
The new equipment that I have got is far more sensitive, it would seem, than the old equipment. So I there's a whole lot more room noise. At least it sounds that way to me. Maybe I'll have it fixed by the time we actually mix this show down. But if not, I apologize to all of you who are hearing behind everything I say.
Well, now they certainly are.
Yep.
Do you want to get to the doldrums?
Sure. Although, how much more is there to say about the doldrums? I mean, I don't say that accusingly. I forgot where we left off.
No, no. My thing is, you know, I just want to talk about the doldrums, but it's sort of a jumping off point.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
Like, we've been there, which made me think of, all right, so we've got sort of creative inertia, and even if you're not doing creative stuff for a living, you reach those spots,
yeah.
You know, where you just don't feel like doing anything. And not depression. That's a serious thing, but something different.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, more than anything, music can get me out of, or it can motivate me.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with any type of motivation is you still have to take the first step, you know? It's like you fight wanting to motivate yourself.
For example, I just yawned during that statement of yours right there.
Well, you were motivated to yawn.
Or I was fighting to get myself motivated to listen, one or the other.
Well, thanks for the effort.
You know, I try and undercut everything you do at every possible turn.
Well, that's what makes it charming.
So I'm sorry, you were saying music gets you out of the doldrums sometimes.
It can. In particular, there used to be this... the Styx mix tape. There's a tongue twister. And I think that's a front runner.
Yep.
That, I don't know, I guess I just slapped it together from whatever other tapes I had, or maybe off the radio, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
But something about Styx, these songs in a particular order, it was like songs act like drugs, you know? Like, it does alter your brain chemistry. Your brain's an electrochemical machino, right? So, and everything that it senses alters that chemistry. So, I don't know. Something about this combination of songs. I do love the Sticks. I know that it's kind of cheesy, but I do love the Sticks.
Mm-hmm. It was just I'm totally with you there.
It was like the sequence, and it worked every time. Yep. That by the time it got through Angry Young Man, yep, which was at about 2/3 of the way through my mixtape, if I wasn't punching the air, you know, in yep glee.
80s going, montage style.
Seriously, you know, this was in my room, oh, life sucks. And at the end of it, you know, I'd be punching the air. Of course, I was manic back then, yeah, but that's all right. So that's sort of a sort of extreme example, a very direct example.
Mm-hmm.
And not that it's motivating necessarily, but I'm often inspired by seeing live music.
Yes.
Like, especially, let's say we're at, like, when you and I have been at festivals and we see they could be friends of ours or just some act that we discover. I remember when we saw the Red Elvises the first time.
Yes. Yes. This 100%. Yes.
A surf rock group out of California that has a couple of Russian dudes and just another surf rocker guy. And they have, it's just Soviet tinged surf rock.
Yep.
Which we recommend, by the way. That's a Paul and Storm recommends.
Absolutely.
But even if, you know, it didn't make me want to, you know, write surf rock songs, it sort of said, oh, wow, that's cool. And then the cool door opened, you know?
Yeah. The cool door. I would, you know what? Here's a challenge to our listeners. Draw us a picture of the cool door.
Well, obviously, it's got Sticks on the front and a Soviet surf rocker's walking
well
through it.
Well, maybe your cool door does. Maybe other people's cool doors have other things on and around them.
Yeah, tell us, what's your cool door? How about you, Paul? What do you think? What's in your or on your cool door?
What's in your wallet? What's on in my cool door? Sometimes it's old episodes of Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
Those cheer me up often. I'm trying to think what else. You know, as silly as it is to say, these days, lolcats actually can pull me out of my doldrums. I take a little visit to IcanHasCheeseburger.com. That's not a paid plug. That's just it's what I do these days. And you know what? People on the internet are really damn funny and creative.
That's true. Twitter has shaken me out a few times. Not, you know, just as an example.
Yep.
Just being in touch with cool people you either know or sort of feel like you know, mm-hmm, through that.
Mm-hmm.
I say it a lot, but I love living in the future.
Yeah, it is nice. Well, it is 2010. We are in the future. You know, where's our hoverboards, I want to know. But otherwise, you know.
Well, I got mine last week. Oh. It came with the desk.
Yeah, but will it ride over water?
Yeah.
Oh, man, you got the latest version then. You got the upgrade.
Hello, it's Amish.
Amish hoverboards. That's the name of this one, right? I'm telling you right now, that's the name of the podcast. Not even a front runner. That's the name.
Yeah, no, I don't see anything displacing that, and I don't want anything to displace that.
Yeah. What was I going to... speaking of Paul and Storm recommends, and just another mention of something we both did individually this past week, we both went to go see the great and hilarious and estimable Neil Innes.
Yes, Neil Innes.
For those of you who don't know who he is, Neil Innes was a...
You know who he is.
Is a musician. Yeah, if you're a geek, you really know who he is, even if you don't know who he is.
Right.
He is a musician, was one of the members of the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band, which was a band back in the 60s in England that was sort of psychedelic and influential. Not psychedelic in the Pink Floyd way so much as the sort of, you know, sort of little hippie-ish, a little, you know, Dadaist, a little intentionally nonsensical. Their greatest hit was called...
They were far out.
They were far out is exactly right. And their biggest hit was a song called I'm the Urban Spaceman. Neil Innes fell into the orbit of the various members of Monty Python and is described oftentimes as the unofficial seventh Python. He did a lot of music for the show and the movies. He was good friends with many of the, you know, the whole gang. And... I mean, he's been and done everything.
Wrote a lot of the music with Eric Idle also with them.
Yes. And he has just been around forever, is absolutely the most charming, wonderful, friendly, warmest human being you should ever care to meet.
And puts on a really fun and interesting and thought-provoking show. And funny. It's hard to do all those things at once.
It is, but he does it. He is actually touring the States this month as we speak. And I'm trying to remember the name of his website because it's one of those... Is it called In His Own World? You talk a little bit while I find him.
Well, you know, it's the future. And if you just Google Neil Innes, I-N-N-E-S, it'll pop right up. I'm going to go on to another recommends while Paul...
Oh, here it is. It's just neilinnes.org. Neil, N-E-I-L, Innes, I-N-N-E-S.org.
While we're doing recommends, there's another cool thing, project, that we've been helping take part of for... Wow! Prepositions are flying today.
They sure enough are. Got to watch out for those low-flying prepositions.
Our good friend and occasional collaborator, Len Peralta... the guy who brought you the thing a week art, the visual thing a week.
A week, yes.
Has a thing he's doing called Geek a Week. It's only in, I think, in its seventh week, and basically he interviews a geek luminary every week, does a little podcast thing based on it, and then distills it down into a Topps trading card type image. So he'll take, like, Jonathan Colton, for example, who was the first Geek a Week, and he made him into a zombie hunter. And then, you know, on the back, there are some little factoids and stats done in that sort of Star Wars card style, which are written by us. So we don't bring it up necessarily because we're participating, but because it's really cool.
Yes.
And some of the folks that he is gathering to do this, it's just going to be so cool when he has this deck of 52 trading cards, which you can see from his Flickr account. And it's just something you want to check out so you can say, I was there in week 7.
Yep.
All of you poser newcomers.
They're pretty damn great. Oh, and here I am yawning again. Wow, how professional of me. Anyhow, what else we got going? Oh, the 10-minute mark was about 7.5 minutes ago.
So I've one of these suggestions off of Twitter that we put out the call for, instantly a few stories popped to mind. And maybe it's because, you know, I still haven't gotten over my childhood. But I seem to easily recall stories about teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And Plugel asked, have you ever corrected your teacher? That was his question, or her question. I'm not sure about Plugel.
Uh-huh.
I have a couple. Paul, if any pop to mind, please go ahead, or if you...
Well, I'll give one. I don't think I've talked about this on the podcast before. This is sort of one of the great... unwritten chapters of, not a great unwritten chapter, but a thing that stuck in my craw. I was a film major for about a year at Penn State and ended up not wanting to be a film major, so I instead just became a mass communications major, which was basically I watched TV.
Yeah.
And one of the classes I took was, you know, some film studies class where we would watch movies and discuss whatever the hell. And one of the movies we watched was Blade Runner. Now, bear in mind, this was back in 1990, before DVDs, before, you know, the internet.
You had to make an effort to watch a movie.
Yeah, I mean, you could have VHS tapes, but, you know, you didn't have audio commentaries and you didn't have the internet. Well, I mean, it was a very rudimentary internet at the time, so there certainly wasn't, like, the IMDb with its trivia section and such right there at your fingertips.
Right, you could probably wait about 20 minutes and have, you know, Harrison Ford's name downloaded to you.
Exactly.
An ASCII picture of Harrison Ford.
My further
which
point...
Which would be a title if we didn't already have the
Yeah, that's
title.
True. Anyhow, this professor was going on and on about how Blade Runner was sort of a modern noir film.
Mm-hmm.
and discussed, you know, there was a lot of talk of auteur theory in this class. So, as you know, it started as it is, it's already kind of half bullshit.
Yeah, a little douchey. Sure.
A little bullshit. But in going on about the auteur theory and the whole noir thing, he talked about how Ridley Scott made the choice to ape the film noir style by having the narration in there.
Okay, now, I see where you're going.
You see where I'm going. I piped up, little junior that I was, saying, you know, I read somewhere that they didn't want the narration in there and that the studio forced him to put it in there. And I was summarily dismissed by my my professor. Oh, that's ridiculous. That's, you know, that's dumb and that's crap. And besides, the narration is in there. And my point, had I been braver enough to make it, was, you know, you're going on about auteur theory and the director as architect of the entire film.
Right.
Is it really, you know, who takes the credit or blame for a decision like that? If a director is forced to do something by the studio,
right,
or the studio sort of takes away Final Cut and throws in this narration or what have you, then is it really, you know, how does the auteur theory stand up to that?
Well, I think that, I also took, you know, a number of film classes as an American studies major and did have one that it may have actually been on, like, the auteur theory and exploring that.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's a question of degree.
Yeah, well, this guy was absolutist about it. That was the thing.
Well, was a douchebag.
Yeah,
you know?
And, of course, numerous years later, you know, you can pop in the, you know, director's cut version of Blade Runner, or you can read the trivia section or any number of articles and interviews with Ridley Scott where he talks about how he was forced to put in the narration. And I wanted to be able to go back in time and take, I wanted to do, what I really wanted to do was do what Woody Allen did in Annie Hall, where for those of you who've never seen the movie, he's standing in line waiting. Standing in line waiting for a movie with his girlfriend or whomever, and somebody behind him is talking about Marshall McLuhan's theories and talking about them all wrong. And Woody Allen turns around and tries to correct him. And the guy says, oh, no, I'm sure I'm right. And so Woody Allen turns around, grabs Marshall McLuhan, however you pronounce his name, and brings him over, who proceeds to tell the guy that he's completely wrong about his theories. And I wished I could somehow have that magic power.
I don't see how bringing Marshall McLuhan over to your teacher would have helped.
No, but it would have been pretty cool nonetheless.
That's true. That is very true.
So anyway, that was enough of me yammering about how I was right about a thing and couldn't prove myself right about it.
You know, I think that if there were a lot of auteurs, it would totally suck, like if it was absolutist, because you read about a lot of changes for a lot of films that were made because, you know, mostly because the studio said it's too fucking long, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That I think most movies would be insufferable if directors always got their way.
Yeah, it's true. So you tell a tale of correcting a teacher.
I've got a short one and one that's a little off topic.
Okay, start with the short one. Let's see how we do.
Short one is I went into the school nurse, and I was an insufferable kid. I was just a smart ass. You know, I was just so fucking smart, you know? And if the catchphrase up until about, I'd say, the fifth grade was the nose knows, because the nose part, because I had a large nose.
Yeah.
Basically, it's the same size. It was the same size it is now, but my entire head was much smaller.
Right.
And, you know, I was a little wise ass, and I knew it. So I went into the school nurse because I'd scrape my knee, I think. And the nurse asked, okay, you know, what's wrong? And I said, it's my patella. And she looks at me, patella, of course, meaning kneecap.
Of course, because you had watched your Schoolhouse Rock.
I don't know where I picked up patella. I just knew it was a scientific and fancy way to say kneecap, and I wanted to show off. And so she kind of looks at me, and then she starts looking at my head. And I said, no, my patella. And she said, right, your head. And then I showed her the scrape on my knee. Uh-huh. And she said, oh, that's your kneecap. And I let it go at that point. And I think I walked around with smug satisfaction. That was one of those moments.
That lasted you 3 or 4 days, didn't it?
Oh, I dined on that. But it was also one of those moments that I realized that adults weren't perfect. I couldn't have been more than 8 or 9.
You sound like the closing 2 minutes of an episode of The Wonder Years. Right now. I learned
every
that
time
day.
I look at my knee. No, but seriously, it was like that. So that was the on point short one.
Okay.
And the other one is more of a. Yeah, it's a general teacher story, and I'm not going to tell it because there's no point in telling it.
Okay. Tease.
I'll tell it another time when it makes sense.
Okay, fair enough. Anything else on the docket?
I've got a couple things. I have something I want to throw to the masses and to you to help with.
Okay.
You know how when it's time for me to make a purchase of anything over about $25 that I obsess about it?
Sure, sure.
And you know that I've been talking about getting a laptop for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And basically, like it was with my new super-duper phone, it was a matter of, finally, I feel like, you know, if I go on another trip and don't have this device, I'm going to be hampered. You know, there's so much I could do if I have the device.
Yep.
And I sort of feel like I've reached that point with the laptop. There's so much that we do that we can do, you know, at any time.
Yep.
That it would be efficacious.
Yep. I'm sick of you fucking using mine.
Well, I don't use it anymore.
That's true. You don't. Well, you do occasionally. Just
not
nearly as much as you had. That's true. Now that you have the internet in your pocket.
That's right. It gets done about, you know, 90% of what I really, really need to do, and it does it well. But I could be doing like 150% with the laptop, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I can be writing. You can't really write on, you know, a droid, you know? It's just, you can, but it's a small thing. At least I feel like I need a full-size keyboard to do that.
Right.
And, or to work on, say, cartoons or even music, whatever, to be able to do that.
Yep.
And I had been pretty sure I was going to get a MacBook Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And I was waiting for them to upgrade the line.
Right, which they have now done.
They finally did. And now I just don't know. And it really is the expense thing. Like they upgraded the MacBook Pros, but not the lowest level. I mean, they upgraded it, but they didn't give it like the super duper new processors.
Right.
However, at that price point, it's really sort of like getting a regular MacBook, which might get the job done anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, for even that same amount of money, getting a potentially faster non-Mac machine.
Right.
Now, the dilemma comes in.
Yes.
In that we operate Pro Tools on Mac.
Correct.
And I have Adobe's Creative Suite 4.
Correct.
For Mac. And even with the higher cost of that Mac, that, you know, I'd have to spend a lot more to get the software. So I'm just chasing my tail here, and I do not want to ignite another, you know, another Mac, PC, Linux, whatever debate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like them both for different things.
Yep.
But, you know, let me know what you think. Or is it worth just getting, say, the Mac that doesn't have the new processors?
So just to be sure, you're asking whether or not you get the super fancy new MacBook Pro low-end or the higher-end regular MacBook, or do you just spend the money and get the high-end MacBook Pro? Is that the decision you're asking us about, or are you including a just-go-get-a-PC in there as well?
I am. Three options. Get one of the higher end ones, which is tray expensive. Get the lower end updated MacBook Pro, less expensive, but still a chunk of change. Or get something for probably half the cost with the same technically processing power, obviously without OS X, and buy whatever pieces of software that I really feel like I would use when we were on the road. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. I don't need, you know, Pro Tools, I don't think. The odds that we're going to do a full Pro Tools session while we're on the road, pretty minimal.
Right. Although it's, you know, again, it's one of those, it's good to know that you have it.
I know.
You know, we've never done it before because we've never had it with us.
That's true.
You know, I follow Lee Unkrich, or we follow Lee Unkrich on Twitter, who is the director of Toy Story 3. Yep. And at one point he tweeted a photo of himself editing Toy Story 3 on a MacBook Pro on a flight, you know, in mid-flight.
And that could be me.
That could be you. That's what I'm saying. You know, he had the tool, so he was doing that. If you had the tool, maybe you would do that. Even if you weren't recording, you might be mixing, you might be doing some, little MIDI programming or what have you.
Or video editing.
Or video editing. Or flash editing.
Gosh. Well, there you have it, folks. Feel free to air your opinions. Let us know. What was it? It was your Sticks
mixtape. Yeah. Oh, your what was it? Awesome Door.
I'll have to go back in the tape because that was the title of this of this podcast.
Your Cool Door, I think it was.
Cool Door. I think it was your Cool Door. Let us know what your Cool Door is.
Or draw a picture.
Oh, right. We really want a picture, but Len will be the only one to send an actual picture.
Yeah, that's
picture.
True. Speaking of that, by the way, while I am thinking of it, we have been remiss. There was a long ago contest we held that we never announced the results of. We had our couple of blind podcast listeners had asked. We instituted a contest for people to draw them based on their descriptions of themselves. And our only entry we ever received was from our good buddy Len Peralta, he of the aforementioned Geek a Week project. And we sort of held out for a while because we wanted to see if anybody else would enter. Not that we don't like Len or that his entry wasn't good. It's just, it's Lenny and we're buddies with Lenny. It's kind of like
he's kind of a ringer.
Yeah, it's kind of like an employee of McDonald's winning the $1 million McDonald's Monopoly prize piece game thing or something. It doesn't seem quite cricket.
And which happens all the time.
Yes, it does. But nonetheless, just to close this chapter, we're gonna have to go back and find his entry and post it somewhere. Len Peralta is the winner of the draw our visually impaired listeners. So congratulations, Len, on that.
You can find out how to become part of the Brigade of Minions and be a Switchblade Lothario.
Yes, you can.
My God, do you want to do that?
You sure as shit do.
At paulandstorm.com, where you can also find out about our gigs, including...
Oh, yes. On April 28th, he said, straining to look at his... calendar. We are at the Barns at Wolf Trap with the Bobs, our old acapella friends.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be a fun one. On Thursday, May 6th, we finally can announce, the gig we have announced before, we're at the Swedish American Hall in San Francisco. We finally can announce that our opening act for this show, Adam Savage. Mythbuster Savage.
Can we tell them what he's doing, or is that a
surprise? Well, we honestly don't know. It is entirely possible he may use it as a dry run for whatever it is he does at Wootstock. I don't know that he is sure yet what he's going to do. So
He could just stand up there and just be Adam Savage.
He could just stand up there
and
make arm fart noises for 20 minutes. That would be pretty incredible, I think.
Well, without a doubt, whatever he does, it's going to be interesting and fascinating and probably funny.
There are, of course, the multi-mentioned Wootstock shows happening on the 7th and 8th in Seattle and Portland. Many, many guests, new ones being added every day. We are on May 11th, Tuesday, at Largo, doing the live Nerdist podcast recording along with Mike Furman and Tom Lennon, one of my comedy heroes. I have to seriously keep myself from geeking out. When we get to hang out that night. On the 13th and 14th, we are in Richmond and Raleigh, respectively, with Jonathan Colton. Then we've got a Canada trip coming up in the end of May. We have two more Wootstocks in Chicago and Minneapolis. Yeah. Minneapolis is pretty much sold out. I believe there are a few tickets left, but you got to check it out real fast. Did I say those are Wootstocks?
Yes, you did.
Well, they still are.
That's fantastic.
So, and a possibility, we are investigating options of trying to do a Wootstock in San Diego the weekend of Comic-Con. No promises, now, nothing is even remotely definite yet, but we are looking into the possibility.
Now, East Coasters and folks in the South and the Midwest, in the UK, Canada, we have not forgotten you.
We certainly have not.
And the everything is on the board. I believe we're going to we're going to do these next couple and then take a look and see where we can hit next.
Yeah. So, as always, we hear your cries, those of you in the places where Wootstock is not, and we're working on it. You mentioned to go to paulandstorm.com. You can find out about all those things and more.
I did not mention that I'm Storm.
I am about to mention that I am Paul.
And we have been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. Oh!
Go do things.